And on the line now, I have Councillor John Lyons. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon to you, John.
And listen, thanks very much for taking the call. I can't believe that we're going to be talking about the Oscar Traynor Road site again. You know, a year ago, you and your colleagues refused to sell the site to Glenview Homes for the development of, what was it, 850 homes, and deciding instead to keep it within council ownership. Now, tell us about the latest on this.
Well, yeah, John, here we are nearly a full year later since we did reject that deal, which would have seen the land up on the Oscar Traynor Road, the Lawrence land, transferred into the private ownership of Glenveagh Living Limited. And we just didn't think that was a good enough deal in terms of public land. The return of public housing just wasn't sufficient enough. So we rejected that deal, and we did some great work in the interim, led by a working group of councillors who came up with an alternative plan which would see Dublin City Council not only retain ownership of the site, but actually lead in the design, the development and the delivery of social and affordable housing on that site, using contracting companies, construction companies, to come on site and build on behalf of Dublin City Council. And that was endorsed by the full council in March of this year. But in the time since then, John, unbelievably, and I think your listeners will be shocked to hear, that the Dublin City Council officials did nothing to progress our alternative plan. And it would appear that they have spent that time since, a good 7 months, working in the background, trying to resurrect the deal that we democratically rejected in November of last year. It's quite incredible.
It is. It's ridiculous. And I think the last time I spoke about this, the Minister for Housing hadn't signed off on it. Like the then Lord Mayor had written to him, or me mailed him 3 or 4 times, and he still hadn't signed off on it.
That's right.
What's the story with this? They seem to want developers to build, and an awful lot of the houses are built to rent.
Yeah. Like, John, not to be cynical about this, but I think your listeners would you know, agree with me, and I think it's just a realistic assessment of what's gone on. And it's quite clear that the charge can be aimed quite sensibly and reasonably at Fine Gael, particularly because they've been in government, leading government for over a decade now. But Fianna Fáil also have no interest, and I mean this genuinely, they have no interest in providing a significant amount of social and affordable homes. They just do not. They have this ideological mindset which says that people should just go about the business of buying overpriced homes so the developers can make a huge margin on private sales. And they will not, in any shape or form, take seriously the job of work that the Irish state has to do, not only to end homelessness, which I mean is a stain on the political system, that somehow we can't end homelessness despite previous commitments by former Taoiseach to do it, as if it's some intractable problem. And they will not, and they refuse to, end the housing crisis in terms of affordability for renters, in terms of social housing lists, and in terms of actually bringing in a supply of housing, affordable purchase housing, that's actually within reach of working people on decent to lower incomes. They just have no interest in it. So they're going to use every lever that they have, because they are in power, to slow down to a glacial pace the delivery of social and affordable homes. And the impact of that, and I think those of us on Dublin City Council who did reject the deal last year, are the ones who are communicated with, contacted by, I mean, so many people on a weekly basis who are really struggling with the lack of affordability in terms of in the private rental sector, in terms of those who want to purchase their own home, and for the long waiting list for those who are in the private rental sector or in overcrowded family accommodation who are waiting on our local authority housing list. I mean, if they really genuinely cared about all of those different families, those individual couples and families, they would grasp the nettle, they would take all the public land that we have, and they would be seriously getting to work about delivering social cost rental and affordable purchase housing. But they don't, John, and this is sadly the situation that we're in. And it looks as if Dublin City Council officials are working in tandem with the Department of Housing to get the Glenveagh deal back on the table, which, as I say, you know, we can go through the detail of it, because I think your listeners will be interested to hear about the kind of money that we're going to be spending just to buy the social houses, in terms of the margin that developers come together, about 50,000 for a two-bed apartment. So the council should be directly building these houses themselves, and they could do it for a lot cheaper. But in terms of just, you know, like, I mean, John, it's frustrating.
I know, John. Well, I'm frustrated, so I can imagine how you and your colleagues feel. The reason that the head of housing for the council, Brendan Kenny, said that it could take at least 5 years before the new project would be progressed to a ready-to-build stage.
Mm.
And that was his excuse for wanting to sell it to Glenby.
Yeah, they're using a timeline that is pertinent to the Emmett Road, the St. Michael's regeneration, which is going to be a mix between social and cost rental. And there is a four-stage process in place between the local authority and the Department of Housing. And there should be a clear and transparent process in terms of when there's a lot of public money going to be spent. We need to ensure transparency. We need to ensure that we're getting value for money. But when you actually look at some of the previous examples of delays in this bureaucratic process, it really is, I think, the fault of both the Department of Housing and the City Council for those delays. There's a technical process to go through, but then there are, I think, in some instances, deliberate delays on both sides in terms of actually progressing through the various stages, which I think most people from a distance have heard previous ministers for housing commit to it, and would hear others say that it needs to be efficiencies need to be secured in terms of reducing down the actual, you know, the actual minimum that you have to go through, because it is overly bureaucratic, and that needs to happen. But at the same time, there does seem to be certain delays by the City Council officials and the Department of Housing. There's a lot of communication back and forth, and I think a lot of that, I think, also feeds in to the notion that they are not serious about delivering social and affordable housing in good time, in like real time, that we could actually have housing in 2 or 3 years rather than this 5 or 6 years. And at another level, though, when you read that report in which the former housing manager, Brendan Kenny, spoke about, you know, how long it possibly could take, it's quite dispiriting, John, because what it means is that they're not looking to achieve efficiencies. They're not looking to recruit more staff. They're not looking to better what they've done previously. They're actually using some of the previous experiences that they've had, and they're waving it as a flag of honour, as if to say, look how bad we can be, look how slow our housing delivery process can take, rather than going, okay, it took X amount of time on that previous project, let's see if we can achieve efficiencies in time by, you know, getting really stuck in and engaging in this current or future projects that we have. So, like, you know, that's another signal to my mind and to many people out there that the City Council and the Department of Housing just aren't serious about tackling the housing crisis.
That's the way it seems, and I know there's a lot of anger out there, and as you said, there's people struggling. Part of this plan would be Glenvy would build the homes, and then the City Council would buy some of them back off them.
When you actually crunch down the numbers, when you go through them, it's quite, you know, like we've all done our sums separately, and I've submitted a series of questions which the City Council officials promised that they'll have answered by Friday. So the vote is on Monday, and we put in a series of questions over the last while. Some of them, in fairness, have been answered, not some of them to the fullest extent that we were expecting, but there's other questions that still need to be answered. One of which is, John, what is the developer's margin? Why are we giving, because we do have to, the vote is about transferring, it's a section 183, and it's a responsibility of the councillors whether or not to dispose of land, and we've been asked to dispose of that 42-acre site, the Lawrence Lands, to Glenbay Living Limited, in terms of transferring the title deeds of that public land to a private developer. Why are we doing that? And what is the developer margin? Why are we involving a developer in the provision of social cost rental and affordable purchase housing, because all it's going to do is make the social homes a hell of a lot more expensive for the city council to purchase. And I referenced earlier a two-bed apartment, which is in one of the reports going to cost Dublin City Council $392,000 plus. And that will mean, if you actually go through the costings for the construction, the site, professional fees, that around €50,000 of that total cost is the developer's margin. Why would we do that? Why would we get a private developer involved? And developers are involved in making profits. That's what they do. But what it's going to do is not only make those social homes that Dublin City Council has to buy, and isn't it crazy that we're going to give public land away that we own, the Dublin City Council owns, and we're going to buy back at overpriced costings these social homes. But it's also going to make the rollout of cost rental, which is a new form of housing, affordable housing, for people who aren't eligible for Dublin City Council or other local authority housing, to pitch it at those people who can't get on a local authority list because their income is too high, but who are being squeezed from the private rental sector. What it's going to do for those folks, it's going to make the rent that they're going to pay, a cost rental rent, too expensive. So you're looking at a studio unit in the Oscar Traynor Road development going for like nearly €1,000 for a studio and €1,200 for a one bed. That's not affordable. And it's then going to make the affordable purchase, the 20% of units that are designated for affordable purchase, it's going to mean that the state is going to have to subvent by about €100,000 per unit, those affordable purchase units, to make them somewhat affordable. But even at that, John, and I think your listeners would be shocked to hear, that won't make them affordable and within reach of middle-income earners, because the developer is making their margin. It's an incredibly inefficient and wasteful way to conduct our business. And one of the questions I'm hoping to get a response to is whether Dublin City Council has conducted a proper cost-benefit analysis of this. And I hope they have internally. But I'm also asking that the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform also conduct a cost-benefit benefit analysis of this. Because when you actually do look at those numbers and you do look at the cost of the social homes for Dublin City Council, you do look at what potentially people, individuals, couples and families might be paying for the cost rental, and when you look at the price of the affordable purchase, none of it stands up to scrutiny. And I don't know how Dublin City Council officials can stand up in meetings and say with a straight face that this is the best deal on the table. It's not by a long way. Our alternative proposal, as we discussed at the very beginning, that was endorsed back in March by the full council, talks about Dublin City Council leading off on the design, the delivery and the development of housing on that site, and that way we can achieve efficiencies. That way I do believe we can work through the procurement process and actually deliver affordable houses, value for money social homes, and actually cost rental homes that are, you know, actually affordable for people to rent, and affordable purchase homes that will actually mean less of a subvention from the state, because we actually have the land and there's no margin. We're not seeking to make a profitable margin. So our alternative plan can be realised, and the negativity of the City Council officials to our plan and the lack of activity they've done, John, they've literally, it's quite galling as a public representative. I've been put there by the people of Artane Whitehall, the people in Coolock and Artane, Santry, Kilmore West, Darrendale, Belcamp, Mowview. I've been put there by those people, and literally the City Council officials are undermining our role. It's quite incredible.
Now, this is more or less the same deal that was rejected back in November. Does this have to go to the vote again?
It does. What they've done, and we're seeking, because apparently the officials got senior counsel legal advice to say they are within the original tender, so that they're on sound legal footing to do what they've done. But they have made changes, John, I think as a response to the rejection by us, and it was 48 councillors to 14 that rejected that deal last November. They have tweaked the original tender so that it does deliver the tenure mix that we were looking for, which is 40% social housing, 40% cost rental and 20% affordable purchase. They say that doesn't materially contravene the original tender, but we haven't seen the legal advice on that yet. But so they're agreeing with our tenure mix, our alternative plans tenure mix, but they still want the developer to be involved, which means a huge amount of waste in terms of money that's going to go into developers' pockets, rather than the city council leading off on the design and development and the delivery of housing on that site, which I think we can do. So it's a slightly tweaked deal based upon legal advice that they say they've received that we've not yet seen. But it's also, John, and this is another, I think we need to get this information out as far and wide as possible, so I'm glad to speak to you today and to your listeners. We haven't seen the actual detail of the development agreement that Dublin City Council officials have struck with Glenbeigh. And, you know, we've been asked to vote next Monday on a deal which we haven't seen. So if listeners can remember the O'Debney Garden deal of a couple of years back, there was a certain number of houses, homes agreed to, and then the developer, Barter, went and looked to increase the number and the densities and the heights by, I think it was about nearly 400. And we have no guarantee that that isn't going to happen again. Yeah. But even parking that, we just haven't seen the deal. So we actually don't know if you were in favour of giving Glenbeigh that land, which some of the councillors apparently, those belonging to the parties who have no interest in solving the housing crisis, they are in favour of it. Surely at just the level of professionalism as a public representative, you would want to see the details of the deal that you're voting on. And we haven't seen that yet. And that's another reason why I think it's a less serious reason in terms of politically, but it's still a serious issue that needs to be resolved before Monday. But it is overall the same parameters in terms of a private developer coming on board, getting ownership of public land, supposedly to deliver public and affordable housing, but you can't, it would be stretching reality to describe that deal as delivering public housing, because it's not in any way, shape or form.
Okay, I know the listeners, they find some of the things that's going on ridiculous, you know, and they can't understand it. Now, I just want to move on, because we're running out of time, John. I spoke to the Santry Whitehall Forum there last week about this. They're talking about building 14 stories high apartment blocks, and they're pretty annoyed about this and inferior about it. But we also touched on, I think she said that the for a two-bedroom apartment it would be 70 and 100 a month. And we moved on from that, and we were saying, don't banks take this into account? If somebody can afford to pay this per month, they can't afford to save, so why can't the bank say, well, they can afford to pay out 1,700 a month, so we should be able to give them a loan, a house loan? Can the government actually do anything about that? Can they bring in legislation to tell the banks, no, this is wrong, what is it doing?
Well, I think like what that does reveal is just that the planning system, as you mentioned, primarily there, and then laterally, that the housing systems are dysfunctional at every level. I think we can quite clearly see that and say it confidently that they are. They're broken because they've been captured, John. Frank MacDonald, the former employment editor of the Irish Times, has spoken about this, that the planning and housing systems have been captured in the city of Dublin. Every policy is introduced. It's lobbied for, and then it's introduced, and it's shaped by the interests of private interests who own land and who have access to capital, who engage in speculative activity. So you look at the planning legislation over the last number of years that allows planning applicants to go as high as 14 stories because it ran roughshod over our own development plan, which had strict restrictions on heights. That was changed by a Fine Gael Minister for Housing at the stroke of a pen, just like that. And when you look at people trying to save in and who are renting privately, look, they're trying to save for homes which are overpriced, and they're paying a rent because there's no rent controls in place that is too high. So it's completely unsustainable. And I think, you know, trying to tweak it with banks allowing, I can see where that's coming from. But to my mind, I think politicians, legislators, And it's not going to come from the people who created this, and that's Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. It's going to come from other people who are serious about ending the homelessness and housing crisis to introduce measures that will actually resolve those particular issues for people. It's not going to come from tweaking rules or allowing certain exceptions, you know, in terms of mortgage lending rules and considerations that banks take into account. I don't think that's the approach to take. I think this is a political issue. The responsibility is firmly with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and we have solutions, but they're not going to be implemented by those two parties. They created and sustain this crisis in housing and planning. They're not going to end it, despite what some of the Housing for All, the government's recently published housing policy claims to. It's not going to resolve any of the myriad issues that we're faced with and communities are faced with. And certainly in Whitehall, many areas, be it the Chirper side over in Coolock, being flipped, but also within that there's a very poor planning permission attached to that site. And right across the city, communities are facing the full impact of these policies. And I think it's a challenge for communities to go to those public representatives and be upfront with them and tell them that it's just not good enough, that they introduce policies which are detrimental to communities and beneficial to private interests whose only and sole motive is profit. It's not about building sustainable communities. It's not about building landmark buildings which will enhance an area, which is a lot of the rhetoric you hear in these planning applications that are lodged. It's none of that. It's about squeezing in as many units as high as possible for as high a rent as possible or selling price as possible. And that's the situation we're in. It's a dire situation that needs to change. But we've had decades of rule by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and particularly in the last decade, it's only gotten worse, the housing crisis. And we have to fight back. And what I would say to your listeners, John, in relation to the Lawrence Lands, the Oscar Traynor roadside, because there is a notion out there, because as you started this interview, it's been a year since we rejected the previous deal, and there is a sense, I think, out there, God, will that land, will that site ever be developed? Because there's been so many different plans over the years. And I think the only way it will be developed and that we actually deliver public housing, social and affordable housing on that site, is when we have a people power campaign to actually ensure that we actually use all public assets, all public land, for the maximum benefit of the public. And that means providing social and affordable housing for the thousands of people, couples and families out there struggling. So not to buy into that fatalism that some people have, that God, that'll never be developed. It will be, but it's going to take a lot of people power. It'll take the public representatives to do their job, and it'll take a lot of campaigning over the next period of time, which we can do. We did it on many other issues, and we'll do it on housing.
Yeah, and the water charges in particular was a success story of people power. Listen, John, I think unfortunately we're going to be talking about these housing problems for many more years, probably months, years, whatever. Mm. And it's a shame. It's an awful shame. And we haven't even touched on the Chivers debacle over there, do you know?
Well, look, more than happy to come back to discuss that, because that's not going away. Our North Central Area Committee is keeping that item on the agenda. We are looking to dezone and CPO that site at a price that the land that site was valued at pre our rezoning decision. So that's we're most certainly not letting that issue go, because the cynical use by Catherine Manlin of using the housing crisis to get that rezoning decision made from industrial to residential, just so that they could ultimately make a massive profit, is morally reprehensible.
It is,
and they need to be held to account for that.
Well, maybe we'll talk about that again in a couple of weeks and see if anything has happened.
Okay.
Listen, thanks very much for taking the call, John.
Thank you, John.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Bye bye.